You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if you told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
Can I just say, this film is absolutely peanut butter and jam-packed. What a great film, right?
Bullet Train. Can I tell you something? 2022.
The ending is the bit. If you're not going to watch any part of the film, watch it like maybe 10 minutes at the beginning.
No. Don't be that person.
Stacey, this
why
is my
are you
idea.
Not watching the whole
I'm
film?
Talking.
What is wrong? Why are we out here only watching the beginning and the... You know, there's some people who read books like that. They first read the end. I don't understand those people. I'm a major, like, anti-spoiler alert person. Don't tell me the movie. Otherwise, I won't watch it because now you told me about it.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, I thoroughly loved the end of the film.
That's a good thing, though.
Yeah.
Because sometimes movies, like, start off strong, and then, like, the ending happens, and you're just like, okay, ready?
So we're talking about the bullet train. Brad Pitt, who else?
David was Brad's stunt double in Fight Club. That's where they actually met. And then he went on to do more stunt work with him for Fight... So he did Fight Club first. Then he did Ocean's 11, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Deadpool 2. So literally, like, he's worked with him. But what's nice about this is... So he was working with Brad, almost like helping Brad build a character. And now this time around, as a director, because he's actually... So he's no longer just a stunt double. He's actually gone on to build up quite a good directing career. He's directed movies like Deadpool 2. He directed the John Wick films. He directed Atomic Blonde with Charlize and a couple of films like that. So he is quite like he's an action junkie, but he's gone on to be a successful director. And then he still didn't think Brad would join the project. He actually said in an interview he didn't think that when...
For Bullet Train.
For Bullet Train,
really?
Yeah. He wasn't sure. Because I think his producer, who I think he's married to, so the producer as well, his wife, I think they were like, get Brad to do it. And he was like, Brad's not going to do it, but okay, fine, I'll ask him. And then he asked him, and Brad was like, all for the script. All of the actors said the script was amazing. And then they went on to make the project together.
Yeah, because if you see David and Brad in an interview together... There's a like almost like a brother connection. I don't know if you picked that up. I just noticed how they were just like so chilled and so.
Because oftentimes when actors, unless they're like Leonardo DiCaprio, when they're with Brad in an interview, you can see they're with Brad Pitt in an interview. If you understand what I'm saying. Whereas like David's, he's just like, yeah, no, me and Brad work together since like.
The way that they were talking about the film, it was almost as if it was their project.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. They were like, oh, no, we did it. We read the script, you know, so...
Work together. And the cool thing is Brad Pitt did, like, 95% of his stunts this time around.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's really cool how... Because he was even joking. So David said to Brad, but you've done all these fights. And then Brad was like, no, you've done all these fights for me. And I've just sat there drinking coffee and going, thanks, David. But, like, this time around, he actually did, like, 95% of his own stunts. So he's even, like, built up his stunt career. So, yeah. Personally, this film gave me Guy Ritchie vibes, honestly. It, like, just the way story was told.
I
thoroughly enjoyed it. The people I went... So, I watched it in cinemas, and the people I watched it in cinemas with had mixed emotions. Because it is... It's not like... I don't know how to explain it. The whole movie is an action film that takes place on a train. Literally, that's the whole 2 hours, and it's a two-hour film, is... They get on a train and they fight from start to finish. That's like the entire film in a nutshell.
I enjoyed also the depth to the film because there was a bit of depth. When it starts off, there's sort of just this like, you know, like, wait, why are they here? Wait, but then if he's there, but then wait, who? Like there's almost like something doesn't make sense here. Hang on. And then... I don't know if you also found this, but I started to try and think and connect connect pieces characters together. Yeah. I'm like, wait, but if they, but then why are they also after the suit? And then they, yeah, they're delivering the suit. And like, but now who's she? And why did he, wait, was she meant to kill? There's that thing. And then at the end, it's just like, and you're like, wow, yeah, it's very satisfying. Yeah. So
on this project, Sandra Bullock does a cameo. She actually has quite a big cameo for
mostly her voice, surprisingly. Yeah.
And then at the end, she obviously shows up. And then there's other cameos. I feel like we're spoiling, right? Because the movie came out a long time ago already.
We told them last week we were going to watch this.
Yeah, exactly.
Film.
So there's a Channing Tatum cameo, and that is actually why. So Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum worked on The Lost City together, and then because of Bullet Train and how much they enjoyed working with Brad Pitt, they then asked Brad Pitt to join them on The Lost City. There is a cameo by Ryan Reynolds, which was such a good cameo. That is like the perfect definition of a cameo. Mm. Like, he shows up for one. Did he even say anything?
No, I don't remember him saying
anything. He just showed up. And then, like, there was a. And Brad Pitt had a similar
all he does
cameo.
Is he takes the helmet off.
Yes. But Brad Pitt had a similar cameo in Deadpool 2. Literally, he's in like 2 seconds of the film. Like, that is it. So, like, this was Ryan Reynolds doing Brad the favor of, like, showing up. But, like.
I wonder how many times he rehearsed that. Because, like, literally, the helmet comes off and his face is, like, doing this. And then it cuts off.
But what was funny was they referred to his character beforehand.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yes.
Like, you didn't know who he was, and then suddenly it's like, oh, that's Ryan Reynolds. Ha-ha.
I'm like, oh.
But I personally enjoyed this film more than The Lost City. For me, Bullet Train is way better than The Lost City. Like,
definitely.
100 times better than The Lost City.
Definitely.
Storyline was brilliant. Mm. Acting was on another level. Mm. Everything. And the crazy thing is, so this whole film is set in Japan, but they filmed the whole film in LA. During the lockdown, the COVID lockdown, so they literally could not go to Japan, so they had to bring Japan to LA, and they had the whole thing was in a soundstage, which is insane. I was just like, how the hell did they do that? They built a train, like carriage, and then they would swap it out, so they would keep redoing the set dressing to do the difference, or whether they were in like the bar carriage, or whether they were in that weird carriage that had that anime character. That dangerous anime character that punched Brad.
And of course, as it goes throughout the film, the train gets quieter and quieter because everybody starts getting off at all the different stops. And I love the way they did it. I saw some like BTS scenes where it was like blue behind.
Yes.
But then there's a majority I saw where they had like an LCD screen, because I even saw in one of the shots, the behind the scenes, where the moving background like stopped.
Oh, did you?
I saw it going like do, because I think they ended the take. They're like, all right, cut, and then they're laughing, and I saw it go do, and then like stop, and I'm like, oh, there you go. So I'm sure the CG guy celebrated. He's like, yes, we don't have to do all of that stuff.
There's actually an interesting story. So obviously, that style of filming. I think the first time it was really used was when filming The Mandalorian, which is a Disney Plus series that's part of the whole Star Wars universe. And it was the first time that they really used the whole having the LED screens on set with the background there, would make...
Everything about LED backgrounds is so much more authentic.
Yeah.
Because of reflection, because of lighting, rays. Yeah. Because like everything, obviously you've just got to be very well planned as to where you are.
That's the difficult part, and I think so. I was watching an interview where David was saying that before they started filming, he was working remotely with a camera crew in Japan at like 2 o'clock in the morning. He was directing them via WhatsApp because obviously the time difference. So they were filming in Japan. They were literally filming all of those shots from the train traveled from Tokyo to another Japanese city. Wow. I can't remember the name now, but they filmed the whole journey.
So that's
authentic footage that they got before they started filming.
That is crazy.
And David himself, I don't know how he was directing over WhatsApp, but he literally said he was directing them over WhatsApp, and it was obviously 2 a.m. his side. Because remember, it was lockdown, so they couldn't go anywhere. For me, though, like these actors, like, they did not experience lockdown the way the rest of the world experienced lockdown, because like they were still able to work on location. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like the whole mask thing was just so stupid, because apparently there was one scene where, you know, the elder, who shows up at the end of the film,
yeah.
He, in one of the takes, forgot to take off his mask. So Brad apparently was like cracking up, and he still said in the interview he couldn't understand why Brad was laughing, because it wasn't a funny scene. It was a serious scene. And then eventually someone was like, mask, and he was like, oh, flip. But like the whole logic of we have to wear masks, and then as soon as they say action, we take our masks off, yeah. And now COVID will stop, you know, and now COVID will not attack us, because COVID's like, wait, guys, they're filming.
You know.
Just have some respect, you know. And then as soon as the director says cut, then okay, go. Like,
I think it's not. I think they do it just for regulations, because it's like, okay, we don't want to get our movie sued. We don't want to get sued. We don't want to get blamed. We don't want to. So let's just practice as far as we can, laws and blah blah blah, so that we can, you know. And although the story that I often hear with a lot of films and actors that were filming during the pandemic is how often they would hand sanitize.
Oh, really?
So, like, in the Marvel films, we heard a lot of our, who plays Doctor Strange?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
How he has a lot of stories. Yes, that's right. Do you remember where he was talking about, in the one scene, so between a cut, he got some hand sanitizer, and then I think he had a sword or something, but it was so sticky. And during the acting, he's like, what the heck? And he's still arriving there. And then I think there was a sword or something he had to handle, and it was really just so awkward. So I know that between hand sanitizing and masking and all of that stuff, but true, it's not like you allow a movie to happen.
But there is, really, these guys literally got to film.
You know, the show must go on. You can't stop making films, so.
There was a director cameo. So I don't know if you remember in the scene where they count the amount of victims that died in that shootout. They still argued about it. Like, no, it was 60. No, it was 17.
Yes, they still counted it. That's right.
So the director's cameo, David, was the innocent victim number 17 who gets blown up by the car.
Right at the end.
That was David.
Oh, cameo. Okay.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah. I loved the humor in this film.
This was a very improvised film. So, David, you get directors who are very... So, like Quentin, for example, he's very adamant about keeping to the script because he's worked on the script for 6 years. So he's like, no, do not say anything else than what is in the script. Whereas David is, I think, maybe also because his roots are from being a stunt double, he's more like he'll improvise quite a bit. Mm. And he even told, so that the two guys that played Lemon and Tangerine, he said to them, like, in fact, most of their dialogue they said was not on script, and a lot of their dialogue scenes went on double the amount of time that was written in the script because of how much they added and improvised in the scene. And I know even the scene where Brad is working with the digitalized toilet. What is it? The smart toilet. That apparently was not in the script. Brad phoned David a day before they shot that scene and was like, we need a smart toilet. And we was like, what? It's like, we need a smart toilet for that scene. And then apparently, like, the set design team and production designer and them quickly
put together a smart toilet.
Yeah. And they obviously had to rig it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Brad said the rigging was, like, insane. But one of the things I respect most about this film is I honestly thought it was shot in Japan.
Can we just have a moment of silence for the person who, like, had to get the pump and organize all, you know, because you know with the squirts of the water,
yeah,
like think about somebody who had to sit down and actually say, okay, what kind of pump is going to be strong enough to, and then how much piping do we need,
and you only have a day.
Exactly,
like we need this tomorrow. What
where are you going? I'm just running into the hardware and getting up. Wait, we need to get two, because what if the first, okay, wait, but what if they okay, let's get three. You understand what I'm saying? Like, these are things that we don't think about, but
you can see, wow. So in a way, this film, I enjoyed it, so I'm not saying this in a bad way, but in a way, this film was slightly chaotic.
Mm.
And I think the reason it was chaotic was because of how much improv went into it. So even the fight scenes, there were times the fight scenes were completely improv, and David said they worked together while as a team, and they would just go for it. But there was a couple of times the fight scenes were improv. There was a couple of times that a lot of actors punched Brad in the face by mistake, and he apparently was just like, no, it's cool. Even Aaron, who plays Lemon, He played Lemon, right?
Yeah.
Or whichever one. He apparently, during one of the fights, fell back and there was a sharp corner that wasn't padded. And apparently it actually hacked away quite a bit of his hand.
Yeah, not Lemon.
So much so was it the other guy. I know his name, the actor's name's Aaron.
Some... also a fruit that...
Tangerine, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's the one.
But he fainted. That is how bad the injury he occurred was. But I suppose if you have a stunt double as your director...
And then before being rushed off, he was like, can we do that again?
Like, what?
And then he got rushed off to hospital. And he spent the night in hospital there to recover. Yeah.
But I think it was a fun project. You can, when you watch like behind the scenes footage and that, you can see it was a really fun project to work on.
Yeah, definitely a Guy Ritchie vibe.
Yes.
I wonder if there's any influence there with David Leitch.
Possibly. But I looked at his other
films. Is David Leitch American or British? Do you know?
As far as I can remember, he had an American accent.
What was that, you know, the son, the father that was there for revenge on taking out White Death, you know his son?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard him talking? So in the movie, he's got a very Japanese accent.
Yeah.
And then when you hear him as an actor really talking, he's actually got a British...
Oh, is he British? Because the father, he's the elder, you know the elder? He's...
Okay, so that's the elder.
Yes.
I liked him.
He was cool.
Yeah.
He was the only guy that wasn't trying to kill Brad Pitt.
Yeah. He just came on and he almost brought, like you said, the movie felt chaotic.
Mm.
For me, he just brought that whole chaotic down.
You know, I think because he didn't have an improvised character, I think he kind of stuck to the script, stuck to his role.
He sort of just took everything because you have all these assassins on a train trying to wipe each other out and he just brought everything down to a focus. Okay, this is what we're doing. And now you're like, yes!
Yeah.
And then... yes, and then you're like, yeah.
But one of the biggest influences on Brad and David, they both love Jackie Chan. Like, they both have said in interviews, he's a huge inspiration to them. And I must be honest, I kind of got Jackie Chan vibes while watching this. Because, with Jackie Chan, his character's often lucky, if you understand what I'm saying. So, no one ends up beating him, and he knows how to fight, but there is a luck plays a very big role.
Like with the items around him.
Yes, when it comes to his fights. And with Brad Pitt, literally his character is called Ladybug. And the reason for that is because a ladybug is lucky. He's seen as lucky. And literally Brad, the whole film, Brad is just lucky. That is it. It's got nothing to do with his skill.
I would love to know there was obviously in the beginning, you see a lot of, bad luck. And I don't even notice at some point the bad luck sort of turned around.
Yeah.
And then it went to, I don't know. I was wondering if there was something a bit more further, if you, you know, one of those, really, if, you know, deep things, you know. No, maybe it's after he bumped into some guy, or maybe rubbed off at some point, or I don't know. Because he steps in the water, and then the point when it starts, when the bad luck sort of returns, is when he has the blood messed on his shoe.
Oh, yes.
Because before that, his survival is all due to luck.
Mm.
Yeah, I think...
basically, everyone he fights, or everyone who's trying to kill him, ends up dying with the thing
because
they were trying to kill him with.
Because of some other causes, yeah.
No, so for example, the Mexican guy, the wolf, he throws his knife at Brad, it bounces off, was it the briefcase, and then gets him in the heart, and you're just like, that's sad, you just stabbed yourself, dude, I'm sorry, I know it bounced off Brad, but...
Was there any, reason for his bad luck, or is it just...
Whose bad luck?
Brad's character, I feel Ladybug.
I feel like he didn't have bad luck, though. When did he have bad luck, other than stepping in water?
In the beginning, he's on the phone, there's quite a couple incidences that happen where you're like, ooh, okay, that's just, sorry. You know what I'm saying? He got off the train. He's been trying to get off the train.
Yeah, okay, we really
then
did
as
try
he
to
got
the
off,
train.
Then there's the woman, and she's the killer. And he's like, no, come, just come. Oh, and he's like, and he has to get back on the train again. That's just bad luck, you know?
But then good luck always stepped in.
Yeah.
and like.
Well, that was kind of the moral of this. He was just like, no, it's not bad luck. Fate just had it. That
I feel like it brought it full circle though, because you know, in the beginning of the film, I think it was a peach. There was a truck that almost rode him over.
The lemons.
It was a lemon truck, right? And that was the exact same truck that it was used at the end of the film to kill. Yeah.
So can we just talk about that water bottle shot?
Yes, the water bottle. I think that was my favorite moment
like
in the whole film.
In complete awe at the moment. I'm like, wow, like the shots and the way they tracked it back and
with the water bottle, like the journey of
and
the water bottle.
And then it ends up right there, and then and you just like the water bottle was a character.
Yeah, no, the water bottle was a character, legit. I think that's why this film works, was even though the story was very basic in a way, because it was quite a basic story. It was just Guy Ritchie is brilliant at taking a basic story and telling it in a very interesting way. And I feel like David has that same like streak in him. But then also like, because like the water bottle in most films would have just been, you know, like put the poison in the water bottle, that's it. Like someone drinks it, falls down, dead. End of story. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas he then went and now made a whole like separate storyline just for the water bottle, so that you could follow the water bottle along with the characters.
This book was listen to me. This book was based on a movie. This movie was actually based on a book.
Yeah. So and it was
a Japanese book, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it wasn't supposed to be as comedic as it turned out to be.
Yeah.
That obviously went along. And you know, when you improvise, I think the greatest comedy works best with improvisation. Mm. Like that's the best. Because, like, when else do you need to improv? Like, in an action sequence, you can't sometimes afford to improv because someone could die. Like, the car could go off the bridge or something.
No, I thought I was steering left instead of right.
Like, sorry, I didn't mean to kill the director.
You knocked out our camera crew.
You know that the actors actually, it became, they started competing to see who could get who to crack up the most. And apparently Aaron was saying in an interview the ultimate aim was, because an interview asked like who was the person that like you would always aim to get them to laugh. And apparently he said it was always, they always aimed to get the cameraman and the boom operators to laugh. Like that was their aim, to try and get the crew to laugh. Yeah, which is intense, because like the crew is there, their aim is not to laugh. You know, like you can't have the cameraman laughing.
You have to be serious.
Was like, see that cameras, the shot suddenly,
shaking camera.
But it was a good film.
It was brilliant.
It was a good film, and it came out in 2022, and the films this year mostly have sucked. So it was a good film for 2022 as well.
Yeah. Good ending. I felt complete. I felt happy, and I was laughing.
The only thing is the language.
Yeah.
But that I think also comes with improv.
Yeah. I would have loved to. Okay, maybe there was just a bit too gruesome some places. Would have loved to show my kids this film, but no, sorry, not for you.
Yeah, but an amazing film. The fact that they brought Japan to LA, they did an amazing job. I literally thought it was filmed in LA. In Japan. I didn't think it was filmed in LA. So that was, the set design was amazing. The acting was amazing, and it was
great cast.
Yeah, great cast.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Peanut butter and jam packed. As I said.
There we go.
So that was
Bullet Train.
That was Bullet Train, people.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know what we're doing next week.
No, we don't.
We'll find something.
We'll surprise you, okay? All right. There we go.
So this has been The Movie Show.
On your favorite ORS.
I'm Sash, by the way.
Nah, you all know who we are. Don't be stupid.
Just in case you were wondering, he's Ryan.
Yeah, come
and
on.
And we're
man.
Signing out.
Go and Google my face. Gee whiz. Ryan Fundersant, by the way.
I feel like you should Google your face right now. For those of you that are watching
on
YouTube,
Ryan
right now is putting a screen recording over this of him Googling himself. There you go.
All right, guys. Well, there you go. Never know what you're going to find. So until next week.
Peace.
Cheers.
Stay updated and entertained with ActiveFM on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, LinkedIn, Spotify, Anchor, and everywhere else. Engage with us. Like the posts, comment, share them out, retweet and repost. Spread the word. ActiveFM. Radio has never been better.